Oh yeah, babies, it's time for shenanigans on NiagarasWaterCooler.com. Turn up the volume, rip off the knob. And now, here we go with shenanigans.
Live from the land of make-believe, magic, and imagination, where George is king. It's a very special episode of Shenanigans, The George Show. Joined here right now by Howie and Rich and Vinny, and I'm Craig. We just had a memorial for George here at the Transit Drive-In, and I'm going to pass it off to Howie for a minute.
All right. At some point soon here, Craig's going to tell a story about how he first met George, but before he does, I'll tell you guys my story about how I first met George. We were doing Lockport Express games, and there was a meeting it involved Craig, it involved myself, George, and former Shenanigans member, one of the founding members of the Shenanigans, Scott. So we show up at the Cornerstone Arena, we sit down, and George and I are talking. I'm like, this dude's huge. It was my first thought was, wow, big guy, right? So it was determined I would do play-by-play. Craig and George would kind of tag team the color commentary, and Scott would fill in as needed. Talking with George, it was like, okay, he knows his stuff. He knows what's going on. As we're leaving that night, I wound up having, you know, during this memorial, they were talking about how George loved to talk. You guys might realize this. So do I.
No.
So there was a conversation between just George and I. So you can imagine how that was. Neither one of us left outside the arena for about an hour and a half. And of all things, we were talking about the upcoming 2016 presidential election. I'm not saying who I voted for, but at that particular time, when was the first year we did all of the hockey? Was it 14, 15?
I think so.
Yeah. I called the winner at that point in time.
He did.
I did. I'm like, it's going to happen. He's like, I don't know about that. I go, no, seriously, because they're going to run the only person who can beat this person, and that's the only person who could lose to that person. And sure enough, it came to fruition. And a couple...
So it's your fault.
Well, I'm not going to say it's my fault. I'm not taking credit for any of this. But it was funny because at some point in the middle of last year, because my political takes are very unique and very sitting on the fence.
So were George's.
And George's were very unique too, but in a different... If I'm down the middle... Basically, both of us would fall down the fence, but I'd be on one side, he'd be on the other, but neither one of us would be on either extreme.
Right.
And it was funny because at one point last year, he's like, you know what, Howie, you got it right. They all suck. I'm like, okay, works for me.
So that's when you guys were talking again,
Yeah. And a few months later, the Red Sox did something and the Yankees did something, and I said something on his Facebook page. So George being George, he blocked me.
Wow.
Yeah. And one of the remaining, you know, couple months of his life, he did unblock me, and we were always on good terms, but he blocked me because we disagreed civilly. Social media is, you know, like that. It was always fun talking with George, though, and as Amy has said, and as a couple other people have said, he was a big teddy bear. And as Craig and Scott and I would always love to do in the group chat we were in, we would say or do things on Facebook to purposely poke the bear, just to get a rise out of him.
Oh yeah,
actually making fun of you poked his bear more than anything.
That's true.
Because I would make a Jewish joke and he'd lose his mind.
We're not going to repeat those jokes. Those are, you know, among friends. And at one point, Craig would say something on the chat, and I would find out later, George told Craig, you can't say that to him. I'm like, if I were offended, I'd let you know. And it takes a lot. Truly, it does.
So, Rich, you said I've never told that story before about how we met.
What story?
The story about how I met George.
You still haven't told that story.
Not on air.
Not on air.
Let's tell it on air. It begs the question, right?
Oh, my God.
I was on the reader advisory panel for the local newspaper, and I was at the meeting, and there was this big guy at the other end, which I didn't know was George at that time. He was the farthest person away from me, and I didn't really know him. I didn't interact. I didn't even say hello to him or anything during the meeting. So the next month rolls around, I get a phone call the day before. Like, hello? Hey, can you give me a ride to the meeting tomorrow? Who is this? I had no idea who it was. It's George from the newspaper. I'm like, okay, I'm trying to, who the heck is, which guy is George? I don't remember. So he's going, I just need a ride. My wife's taking the vehicle to work. I go, okay, where do you live? And so the next day I go out, and I had a small car, and those of you who knew George, he was 6'5", so he was a tall large man. And so he walks out of the front door of his house, or the side door of his house, and I realize, oh, this guy, I know him. He gets in my car, and he goes, looks around the car, looks at me, and he goes, I hate your car. This car sucks. And that's my first interaction with him. I didn't know the guy. I was doing a favor because we were both on the advisory panel, and that's how I met George.
That is the best story you've ever told. And I wish you hadn't waited this long.
Obviously, you guys met him at the podcast.
Yeah. I met George through the podcast. You contacted me and asked me if I wanted to do it, and I hesitantly agreed and showed up at your house.
Were you hesitant about it?
I was.
Really?
Well, I've never done anything like this before. I come walking in. I've never been to Craig's house before. Never met any of you guys.
Well, you've been to my house before because you'd come help me with my internet.
Oh, that's true. I never went in the dining room, though.
No, only in the basement.
That's where we record, yeah.
So basically, before he was an employee, then he was a guest.
Right.
Is that how it works? Okay. He went from tech guy to guest? Okay.
Well, if I was an employee, I was still missing my W-2 and my paycheck.
Yeah. You could put that on your taxes as a donation.
Yeah.
Write it off.
Are you a charitable donation?
I'm charitable.
Yeah. George and I didn't really know how to interpret George at first. I can't deny he made me a little nervous. But
big guy.
Once I got his rhythm, I learned how to get under his skin and annoy him enough that it got to be fun. And I realized he's mostly harmless. So
mostly.
Mostly.
So even though he's, bigger than most of us, he wasn't coming after anybody, regardless of what he had to say. So I got to being willing to lean into him a little bit during the podcast, and we had some laughs over that. I think the best feedback we don't really do that here, but the one time George wasn't well enough to participate, and he was busy with the band most of the time, so he kind of stepped away from the podcast a bit. We brought in, what's your name again?
Vinny.
And we brought in Walden.
What
and,
a doofus.
George, of course, had opinions on that. So Craig let us know that he liked Vinny because he's bringing in the military perspective, and he liked Walden because he did the Trump impression. He thought that was
the voices.
Pretty funny.
He loved the voices.
He loved the voices, and I'm just an asshole. Which I took as a high compliment because it was George.
Well, your work here was done.
Yes.
So yeah, exactly.
So the fact that I rubbed him the wrong way meant I stuck in his mind, and that's just how George reacts to things. So, that's great.
And then, Vinny, you met him one time?
No, I met George three times.
Three times?
I met him once at your birthday party when he briefly popped in, but then I got to do two podcasts with him. And so the first time I ever saw him was at one of the podcasts, and I was like, good God, this man is big.
Yeah.
Like, he was a very imposing individual physically, just because of his size. I remember a couple of things from the first podcast. I always remember his grizzled voice because he had that grizzly voice. But then he was always like, all right, come on, guys. Come on. What's next?
What's next?
Because he was always trying to get us to move on. And then everybody's sitting around the table looking, going, there's like five more jokes in this article.
We're not done riffing on this.
We're not done yet.
I think it might have been exactly what I said.
And then the last podcast I got to do with him was right before he got really sick towards the end of his life. And I think it was February.
Sounds about right.
It was like the last week or the second to last week of February. But we were all sitting around and we were talking. And he and I had a difference of opinion. And we kind of talked it a little bit. And we kind of like blanked everybody out for about 5 minutes and just kind of went back and forth a little bit. Nothing crazy. He got it to where I understood his point of view. I got it to where he understood my point of view. And then we just moved on. And that
you
was
agreed to a disagree.
I wouldn't even say it was an agree to disagree, but I would say that it was a great civil discourse. But we understood the other's perspective and how, the other one saw it and moved on. And I thought that was fantastic. Those are, the few times I've met him, those are the things that I will take away from knowing George briefly.
In the chat that Craig was talking about, at least one of the ones I think you were talking about, that included you and me and George and Scott.
Right.
There was at one point, I want to say it was right around the election, George and I got into a chat room style debate.
A brawl.
It was a brawl. It was knockdown drag out.
And
at one point, Craig jumps in and tries to
I was talking about topless girls or something like that.
He every five words, he was like, boobs, boobs, boobs.
And this was on text?
This was on text.
So were y'all like typing in caps to each other?
Occasionally.
It happened once in a while.
But we just kept going, and Scott at one point goes, nice try, Craig, it's not happening. We were just at each other's throats. And the funny thing was, at the bitter end, George is like, I love you, Howie. Same page, different paragraph. I'm like, after all that? We're just going to all that? Okay.
This was all day. It wasn't like a short argument either. This was hours long.
I don't think George and Howie would be capable of having a short conversation.
No, that's not possible.
No.
But speaking of which, we do have somebody else at the table here.
We do. So we have Dave here.
Dave.
George definitely didn't do short conversations, and he carried most of it.
So. Well, you met George.
I met George through hockey, through the Lockport Express. I actually got into the Lockport Express myself kind of by mistake. My wife and I ended up being billet parents for two guys out of New Jersey, and this was 5 years ago now. So we went to the kids' first game just to see what it was like, and I had never been involved in junior hockey
before.
They
suckered you.
Yes. That's a yes. So I'll tell you how it really went down. I'll get to George in a minute, but anyway.
And I talk too much.
Well, you had to deal with me on a microphone in the rink there, Howie.
That's true. Yeah, I know.
So anyway, the very first game that we go to, I am yelling incessantly at the referees. They are missing calls left and right. And it got to be, I'm going to say, the beginning of the third period. And the owner of the organization, Steve Biomi, comes over to me and he says, they need some help in the penalty box. You want to go down there and help them out? Well, I didn't know any different. I'm going, yeah, I can go down and open the door and close the door. That's not a problem. The problem was they didn't want me in the stands yelling at the referees.
So you yelled at them in the penalty box.
But I didn't find that out until after the game was over. So anyway, they had a guy who actually plays in the Next to Nothing band by the name of Joe Gatta that was doing their kind of play-by-play thing from the penalty box and calling out penalties and goals and all that good stuff. And he took a hiatus in the first week in October of that year, and I've been there since. So I've been working for the Express and for the Niagara Falls Powerhawks and Thunder for the better part of 5 years. Spent a good 3 years with George in Lockport. He hated to see the team move from Lockport.
That's an understatement.
He was fighting tooth and nail with the rink, with one of the main sponsors, Mike Landers, with GM Frank Vecchio, and with owner Steve Biomi about trying to get the team to stay.
He was passionate. For sure.
He was definitely, and he loved the kids, and he especially loved Chris Gasowitz, who was the captain of the team. Absolutely loved that kid. George did a lot for those kids, for their morale. He boosted them up. He did as much as he could to promote not only their hockey, but just their personalities and who they were, and tried to get them involved in the community. And I remember when, in that first year, when I had the two billet boys at the house, I got a call from, actually, I didn't get a call. I got a Facebook message one day. George was sick at that point and needed help shoveling his driveway and couldn't do it. So I ran downstairs to our basement and I grabbed the two boys and I said, let's go.
Was one of those guys Dylan?
It was. It was Dylan and Tim, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Jenkins and Sheese?
Yep, exactly.
Oh, nice. Yep. Okay.
I said, let's go. I said, we got to go somewhere. And they go, where are we going? I said, you know George that calls your games?
The really tall guy.
From the press box? They go, yeah. I said, well, he's got cancer. And he can't shovel his driveway right now. I said, and we're going to go do it for him. So we jumped into the back of my pickup truck and took our shovels and stuff and went over there. And we shoveled out George's driveway and sidewalk. And Amy had made cookies, and she gave the boys some cookies, and they were psyched. And so just helping out a friend when you can, that's a good memory I had. But George and I had another battle going on. I am from Massachusetts, and I am a staunch Boston Bruins fan. And George couldn't stand the Boston Bruins.
By the way, go Blues.
We'll see what happens. It's only 1-1.
Right.
George and I would go back and forth about the history of the NHL and different players and eras. And
you know, you talk about they wanted you out of the stands because of how loud you were. You know the foul language signs that are in the arena? George always used to call them the Craig signs because
Craig was almost thrown out by a referee.
Yes. At the end of one of the showcase games, and the game ended, and the whistle had already gone. It was a terrible we call it refereeing. It was Charlie refereeing. So that'll give you a frame of reference.
Was that the first showcase or second showcase?
The first showcase.
The first showcase, okay.
Yeah. And I ran down to the glass, and I'm screaming at the at the referee. And George, in his lumbering way, runs down after me. He thinks I'm going to fall over the glass, so he's literally got a hold of my belt loop. And he's going, settle down, settle. And I'm screaming at the refs. Bend over, use your good eye. And the time was out.
It's a shame you weren't actually kicked out. It would have been another punchline.
Craig, well, you got to admit, though, some of the best times that you and I at least had with George was when we were doing Hockey Day in Lockport.
Oh, yeah, when they gave us free reign to do anything we wanted.
Yeah. So basically, I would run the time clock. Craig would sit there and ad-lib, and George had the mic in his hand. And George, they wanted George to...
George had played with those guys, so...
I know.
So he kind of had this camaraderie, especially with the not with the new guys. He couldn't stand the new guys.
No, with the old-time alumni.
Yeah, the vintage alumni and the new alumni.
And they actually wanted... The new alumni wanted no part of us being there. They wanted to play hockey. They wanted to fight. There was actually almost a fight in an alumni game.
The first year, they kicked some kids out, and they're blaming George and I. You guys are jerks. You guys are assholes. Why'd you kick them out? We didn't kick them out.
Yeah. Yeah, we're not referees down there. I mean, you know, but we had some fun with George on the box, and we had a lot of laughs. And
we had some fun when we were doing the games.
We definitely did have fun.
But I'm talking like on the actual broadcast of the games. There were times when the refereeing got so bad, he was insulting the ref on the air. And then there were times when the players on the opposing team became so not good in terms of, you know, they were very Brad Marchand-esque, right? That George was calling them names on the broadcast that he should not have.
Yeah, we were playing.
He's a teenager. You can't.
We were playing the Aviators one time.
Yeah,
and the Aviators goaltender had an A on his jersey for the alternate captain, and George did not like this goaltender. He goes, "You think the A stands for asshole?" I'm like, "Dude,
you can't say that on the air."
You can't say that.
And the greatest part about that is that. No, I'm down.
You may have been right on that one, though.
Yeah, it's true.
I'm down in the penalty box. I'm down in the penalty box area, and I can hear 90% of what these guys are saying because it's so loud in the rink. So loud that
you can hear us.
Your broadcast. We could hear some of the stuff you guys are saying, especially when George stood up and started yelling.
he was yelling on the broadcast. This is true.
Absolutely.
We have George's brother Rich here.
Greetings.
You got any great stories you want to talk about, George? I mean, you have way more than all the rest of us do. How was he as a big brother, though? That's the first question we have.
Well, he was... I've listened to your show. No, I don't need to apologize for that. I've actually enjoyed it. So, no, I've listened to your show, and I know you guys are all about... I'm trying to think of something funny. I don't know how many of you guys were there... Well, what do you want first? Do you want stuff like way early on, or do you want stuff? Because to be frank with you, his last couple of days. So if anyone heard the eulogy, I guess, by his wife, Amy, you know that the Monday and Tuesday before he died, he was in rare form for George. We had the best jokes flying around. So, all right, for example... We had all of these people coming in, and probably some of you guys did. I'll be frank, if I've met some of you guys there, I don't remember because it was all blur.
Rich Scott and I came on Sunday.
Okay. Yeah, no, I think on Monday, we had like a whole bunch of visitors by then. And I'm like, man, so George and I, we didn't need to get into detail to communicate to one another. So look, I knew what he was thinking. He knew what I was thinking. The only thing I said to him, I'm like, you're like Don George sitting here. And he did his arm raising thing. If you know what I'm talking about, he'll do the whole Pope raising the arm or the Don George. And it's exactly what it was. He was like holding court there. But it was so uncomfortable because doctors would come in and, like Amy said, they'd ask, well, how you doing? Oh, I'm dying. What do you think? I'm not doing very well, but I'm dying, but everything's okay. We had this Korean... minister come in. I'm going to need my wife to help me with this. They had this Korean minister come in, and he was all smiles, and he's like, how's everything going? And George, again, is like, well, I'm dying. Yes, I'm dying well.
and we know George's feelings on religion. So.
Yeah. The guy was like, well, can I something to the effect, I don't remember verbatim.
Can I pray for you or something like that?
Can I do anything for you? Well, if you need me, he goes, I'm here. And he's like, I don't think I'm going to need you. I'm doing all right over here. I honestly, guys, I don't know if I have like really, I don't have any funny anecdotes right now. George to me, I'm going to be serious, I guess. George to me, he enabled me to be who I am. He was a real special guy. I mean, you wouldn't know it. Like, everybody who knew him thought he was this caustic, bombastic, opinionated, stubborn, just big. And he could be intimidating just by his sheer looks.
Right.
You know, so just the wrong word out of his mouth. He could have meant something completely different. But because of the way he looked and the way he said it, you'd thought that this guy was like, you know, he was just the most evil thing that's come. You just want to get out of his way. The opposite was true with the guy. He just said what he thought. We get it from the same, wherever we got it from. I say what I think. He says what he thought. And that was it. Whatever I would do, starting as a little kid, I was not the best little brother in our very young years. I was the little evil little brother. Evil things to him.
I have an evil little brother too.
Yeah. And he forgave that stuff. And by the time he got to college and I was still in high school, it changed. So like I totally respected him. And he went off to college. It's not like a big brother scenario where he didn't want anything to do with me. He invited me over to his dorm room. That's when I started partying with like the college kids. When they would do stuff, I was invited. I would go. I would leave school, and if I didn't work, I would drive up to the college campus just for something to do. And never once told me to leave. Hey, Rich, come on in. What are you doing? I'm not doing anything. Or we're doing this and this and this. Always invited me along. So he was my fallback in life. I could do whatever I want, and I did. I left for Texas. I came back. I had a place to live. When I was in college prior to that, you know, whatever I wanted to do, I did it. And then I knew I had a place to go. If you know George, he was a little stingy. He always thought he was poor. But so he never gave me money. But he gave me everything else. He gave me I always had that comfort zone with the guy. And that's, well, I think that's the theme that we had earlier, is that George is the big teddy bear kind of person. Loyal, comfortable. He was just like that rock for a lot of people's lives. And that's what he was for me, except throughout my entire life.
I think that he was kind of protective of you, too. I know when you moved to Texas, he wanted you back here, didn't he?
Oh, my God. I pulled out a letter. You're going to make me cry. So I was going through the pictures and my stuff, and I pulled out a letter that he wrote to me when I finally settled down in Texas. So I just didn't leave and go someplace directly. A friend of mine and I, we left, drove around in this big old 1970 Chrysler down. We got spit on by truckers in New Orleans, and we finally made our way into Texas, and I got a residence there. Called George, here's where I'm at, this is my address. He wrote me this like 3-page letter saying, because I understand why I had to go, but now you got to turn around and come back. He goes, I got a place for you whenever you want to come back. Like I was just saying, we got a place for you whenever you want to come back. He goes, we can do this, this, and this, and this. And he did. He waited. I was there 3 years, and I finally called George up. I'm like, George, I want to come home. All right, I can't get you here, but if you get up here, you got a place to live. Sure enough, I took a bus back because I could have flown, but I wanted to see travel, the last thing. And I got home. He picked me up from the bus station, threw me in a room in his house, and I lived there for. I went back to college, and he let that happen. So, you know, lots of funny moments with the guy. We had lots of. I mean, we did drugs together.
Oh my God!
You know, George.
Well,
he was
in a Pink Floyd band. I can't say I'm shocked.
Yeah. Well, we went to UB, and you know, there's. Anyway, we did. We had a lot of fun. Fun moments that you simply cannot replace. I mean, you guys, I don't know again how you know him, but we would actually go out and do stuff all the time.
He left the house.
He had a band in college. So there's another guy floating around here. Pete was his singer in band. Sorry, so you want to know why? The Pink Floyd connection, I can give you that. So we both liked Pink Floyd. We had like the Wall tape, you know, as we both listened to it. He had that first, and then I listened to it too. He said, oh, I love this thing. We lived in the ghetto. We shared a room together, and we shared music, and we listened to music a lot. And he'd like, I love this Wall. You got to listen to this Wall. And I was like, oh, whatever, you know. But one day, So we were doing, he had moved to a house in Windspear with his band while he was still in college. And this is when we were enjoying a carefree, drug-fueled lifestyle. But it was, you know, this was back in the 80s when you could do it and it was still okay. You know, now you're like, oh, you're talking about drugs? But no, back then it was, the cops didn't bother. They would come in the middle of the night. We were like be banging on instruments like at 3 in the morning. And they just come, can you please turn it down? The neighbors are complaining, you know. So one of these nights, we're doing this at 3 in the morning, and I knocking on the door. I stumbled onto the door. I opened up, and there's a cop sitting there with a flashlight. I closed the door. George, there are cops at the door. He's like, I don't want to get it. I'm like, it's your house. So he went and talked to the cops. I don't know what he said to them, but he said, they just told us like, we got to turn it down again. And they left, you know, but here we are partying. We would go out like at 5 in the morning with tambourines and a hat and sit at the front of the Windspear house. And we'd go on, you know, and sing to the cars that were going by and the buses. And that was one of his favorite stories, one of his favorite moments. Anyway, the Pink Floyd thing, I digress, I'm sorry. So with his band, one day at the Niagara County Fair. So I don't know if you guys have, I don't know if they still have the stage there. There's a stage. And his band at the time got a gig there. So, and at the time, I was helping him with his band. I wasn't in the band, but I was helping him play shows and moving stuff around. And it was in the middle of like 1988, like I said, I talked about in my eulogy, he was all about those magic moments. The whole summer was one of those magical summers. Perfect. You couldn't have asked for a better life that summer. We arrived with his stuff, started moving his stuff to the stage, and as we got closer, what is on the loudspeakers is Dark Side of the Moon, at the very beginning of Dark Side of the Moon. So it was just a magical moment that just sunk into whomever was there. Every one of us. Pete was there. If Pete talks to us, I'm sure he remembers that. That was what crystallized the Pink Floyd thing for George, because that just reverberating throughout, right in the middle of this magical summer. He had his girlfriend at the time, and nothing was wrong. Everything was beautiful and marvelous, and there's the song. They were playing a gig that they were, like, their first real big gig in front of a big audience. And again, Dark Side of the Moon is playing, and just the way it wove in and out of our being, if you will, it just, after we left, it was just crystallized. We couldn't get enough of that sound. And from then on forth, that was George's thing, Pink Floyd.
And that culminated into I Just Sat on My Balls.
Yeah. Eventually, that turned into the solo and Sat on My Balls. Yeah.
So. I'm going to backtrack to something you said, because we were talking about how George loved to talk.
Yeah.
And it's been established on this podcast, I'm somebody who loves to talk also. So you're saying you don't know what he said to the cop? Doesn't matter what he said. He probably just talked the cop's ear off. The cop's like, you know what, enough already. Just go. Just go. It doesn't matter. Just do it. I don't want to come back and hear you anymore.
Buffalo cops, especially at the time, college kids on Windspear.
Yeah, whatever. They're used to it. You know?
They're not hurting anybody. Just be quiet. You know, basically that was it. Meanwhile, you know, if you were to walk in the house, it could have made his month in terms of quotas, but it didn't. So, yeah, it was, he was a great big brother. I mean, when he died, that's one of the last things that we said to each other, man, because I don't have any complaints. And I'm like, I don't have any complaints either. I mean, there's always stuff left on the table, right? There's every relationship, there's stuff left on the table. You weigh that against all of the good and all of the memorable and all this stuff of substance, and the stuff that's left on the table meant nothing comparatively. So, yeah, it was great.
The last thing you said to me was sign language. You gave me the finger.
Yeah. All right, so here's another thing. So I told you it was fun. I wish I could remember some. Well, some of the jokes were, he had his writing gig, right? And he was trying, on his deathbed in Roswell, trying to explain to these people that he's no longer going to be able to work for them. He's like, I don't know what to tell these guys. I already told them that because of circumstances, I'm not going to be able to work for you anymore. But they're writing me emails asking me if I could do this job. So we started joking around. I said, all right, George, take dictation. Due to circumstances beyond my control, I am dying, and I will no longer be able to provide services to you. P.S., I might be interested in a ghostwriting position in the near future. He loved that one.
That's
so
awesome.
All right, here's another one. So my mother has dementia, and she's in the facility over there. Prior to her getting her in the facility, she would always... One of the things that we would run into, one of the reasons we discovered that she had dementia, you know, I talked to your grandmother last night. Well, my grandmother's been dead for like 17 years. So, oh, yeah, I'm sure you talked to grandma. Yeah, we called her Bopshi. Yeah, I'm sure you talked to Bopshi. Oh, I talked to your grandpa, your Jaja, his grandfather. Oh, you did? Yeah, he's been dead for like 25 years. And I talked to your uncle Leo, who's been dead for what, about a decade now, probably? So that was the running gag between us. Jeez, she's talking to dead people. Something's really not right. So finally, you know, we caught on and got her put in the facility. Well, one of the last things he said was, because, well, Richard, if Mom's right, I'll be talking to you in a couple of weeks. Oh, no. I'm sorry. I screwed it up. Because if Mom's right, tell her I'll be talking to her in a couple of weeks. So, God, I blew a good joke. That was
That's still funny.
Yeah.
He didn't like anything very serious.
No, he did love a lot of... Actually, he was a very, very serious and sensitive person. You would just never know it. Because all of that you experienced from him was one of two things. Protective shell, or the person who was searching... Like I was talking about, for that something. That something to grasp onto. And so he took like what you guys were doing very seriously. He loved it. You know, it was very serious. But what made the moment special was letting loose. And he was exceptional at doing that.
I remember just before, I guess it was like Monday, he was having a good day that Monday, and Amy had asked for people to send messages to him that she would read them to him. So I said something about, I'm having tacos next week. I expect to see a sign hopefully in my taco shell.
Yeah.
Next Tuesday rolled around, I had tacos. I took a picture of it. And I said, I'm waiting, George.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I've been waiting for my mother to say something. She hasn't talked to him yet. So he must be lost somewhere.
George, you mentioned, like, we've talked about... He was a writer.
Yeah.
So when we first started Shenanigans, and Scott's joined us here, he's been very...
Patient and quiet.
Silent and quiet, and he's waiting over here. But if he wants to chime in on this one, he can. One of the first stories we talked about on one of the first shows was how the definition literally in, I think it was the Oxford Dictionary, they added to the definition of literally...
The whole definition figuratively.
They made the definition of literally... Figuratively, that night, I swear to God, we broke George.
I thought he was losing his mind.
He's like,
night.
You can't do that. That is figuratively the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. And it just went off from there. I think the middle of the show, it was just solid laughter for like 10 minutes. And he was just ranting at us like, you can't do that. No. I don't know how much more of the story I can add. Craig, Scott, add to it if you can. I mean, there's like, how much? He was broken.
It went on for quite a while. In fact, if I recall correctly, when we were done with the show and you guys are lumbering down the stairs because we were doing the show on Market Street.
Right.
You're lumbering. He's still bitching about it.
I gave him a ride that night, amazingly, in my car.
Yeah.
That he hated.
No, this was an even smaller car.
Oh, he probably hated that even more.
Yeah. I asked him if he wanted me to take the front seat out so he could sit in the back and have leg room. And he called me an asshole. Yeah.
Yeah, oh, yeah, look. So Rick is delivering the art from...
Godzilla.
From the Godzilla movie, yeah, production art. That's very nice.
Oh, very cool.
It is very cool. All right, I'm going to point this out now that it's right in front of us.
Sure.
Put glasses on that. It looks like George. I'm dead serious. Yeah. Look at the poster behind us over there on the wall. Put glasses on Godzilla. It looks like George from the side.
He would...
I think he'd love that.
He would probably laugh, and then he would go...
Nah.
Nah, and then he'd... Probably laugh again. Yeah. So those are really cool, Rick. Thank you. We'll take a look at them.
Yeah. Rich, was it you that was saying that George was a half glass, glass half full?
That was David.
It was David.
Wasn't incorrect.
Right. Yeah. So I've got a great glass half full story that really kind of sums up George. A few years ago, George was doing movie reviews prior to Niagara's water cooler being a thing. He was doing movie reviews for East Niagara Post. And every once in a while, he would do a classic movie review. And he did one for Kentucky Fried Movie. Do you remember this, Craig?
Oh, yes.
So he did a movie review for Kentucky Fried Movie, and I don't remember exactly what it was that he said, but one of the...
He said part of it was a ripoff of something.
So was it Zucker?
I don't remember who it was, but one of the guys.
One of the creators of Kentucky Fried Movie, somehow or another, read this online and commented on it. Now, rather than George being excited that his work got seen by one of the creators of the movie that he loves so much,
sure,
he's pissed off because he's like, that dude called me a liar. So I tell him this thinking he's going to be, you know, super excited. Oh, wow, that's great. Literally pissed. And he's like, oh, that guy's an asshole anyway.
Or figuratively pissed.
Figuratively pissed.
Figuratively. Yeah.
And whatnot.
Yeah, that would have been yeah. George, yeah. So it's like with when he interviewed RJ.
Oh, yeah.
And the first thing RJ said as he's talking to him is like, You stole my line.
Well, Scott will attest to this. The night that he met RJ, there was speculation that he might not be able to come because his wife was sick. Mm-hmm. And so we're going, RJ's not coming. He's not coming. And he got really down. He was going home.
Yeah.
And then when he walked in, he was like, you know when your kids walk downstairs on Christmas morning and they jump around the Christmas tree? That was George.
No. Kids walk down on Christmas morning and Santa's still there with the presents. That was George.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. No, RJ, man. So in our bedroom, in the ghetto, his entire half of the room from the figuratively, from the floor to the ceiling and the ceiling on all three sides of his part of our cube covered in basically 80s Sabres clippings from Sabres-oriented magazines. So it was just Saber stuff. And I don't know if you've been to the house, but he has that pennant, a couple of pennants. Those were up there. But he was a huge, huge hockey fan. But I think he became an RJ and Ted Darling fan because part of the whole thing was watching these guys on TV or listening to the radio, the excitement that they whipped up. So I can imagine the first time, I wasn't there, but the first time that he met RJ, he must have been internally very, excited.
Oh, yeah.
But if you see the video, well, I actually have the video in the video. He's, totally calm. And then when RJ quips back at him, he just keeps going on. George isn't taken aback, doesn't miss a beat. Well, and he goes on to the next thing he wanted to mention to him. So that was pretty cool.
So how did you end up meeting George, Scott?
Through the Union Sun.
Because he was writing for the Union Sun.
He was writing for the Union Sun, and I was working as, what was my title at the time? City editor, I think.
Sounds right. I was there for a while.
And so George was a columnist, and he would send his columns in. And if you wrote for the Union Sun and Journal, people hated you. That's just how it works.
Right. Unless you're Bob Confer.
No, people even hate him, which makes no sense whatsoever, because Bob is literally the nicest guy ever.
Right.
So he would get hate mail on occasion. And anytime he would just throw his arm. I'm done. This is the stupidest thing ever. People are stupid. I'm not writing for this thing anymore. And then, the next Tuesday, I'd, email him. Hey, George, we get a column this week? Oh, yeah, I'll have it. But every single week, because he would say things, how do I put this? He occasionally pissed people off.
He was very direct.
Yeah, yeah. And so, people don't like to be pissed off. So they would respond, and he would respond in kind by quitting every single week.
He would always call me, say, I'm late. I got to write an article for the newspaper. He's always late with his articles, apparently, because he kept on complaining about it to me.
He'd get him right on the deadline, wouldn't he?
No, he was usually pretty good.
Was he?
Yeah. But it's funny because, so I worked at the Union Sun and Journal, 99, 2000, something like that? And then I left and I came back. In between when I was there and when I came back, you and George were on the editorial board.
Right.
Which I think is kind of funny. And I feel like I have to have known this, but it that kind of popped out to me. I'm like, wow, how infuriating that must have been for the two of you, because unless it changed at some point or another, that was the most worthless hour of
it was,
any week.
It was futile. The best part of it was the free food.
Wait, there was food?
There was food.
Huh.
We got fed well there.
So there
was your raise. Thanks.
What happened, the first time I was at the Union Center Journal, I was on the editorial board, and then they fired me. And so that must have been where the food money came from.
There we go.
But I served on that board with Clip Smith, among other people.
Oh, boy.
God.
Well, then Clip
got me. Are you gay?
Then Clip got me the job at LVL. And then LVL fired me. I ended up back at the Union Sun and Journal.
We're joined here now by Rick, the owner of the beautiful Transit Drive-In. How's it going, Rick?
Good.
Thanks for having us and allowing us to set up here and do this.
It's an honor.
So you got any other George stories for us?
Oh, where do we start?
I'm going to bow out from our the broadcast at this moment. So
thanks for joining us.
My wife. Thanks for having me on. Yeah.
Thanks a lot for joining us.
You guys, like I said, George loved you guys and loved the show.
Most of us.
Most of us. So
thanks, Rich.
Thanks right. for thanks Thank for thanks. Some of the memories. And
so, Rick, for people that weren't listening to the that weren't here for the actual memorial, am I correct in summing up that George basically forced his way into your life by repeatedly showing up at your door until you let him in?
Pretty much. He was like for 5 years straight, like the first or second car in line every week. Him and Amy. He introduced himself, and he was on our MySpace page at the time, which MySpace was the big thing.
He probably had his band on there too. Isn't that what MySpace is for?
Yeah.
Sure. Well, this was before Facebook was a thing. We just became friends because he was just such a warm person and such an outgoing personality. And he loved the drive-in theater, obviously, because he was here every week. and he never missed an opportunity to just tell me how much he, you know, enjoys coming to the drive-in and the experience and, you know, how he grew up going to the drive-in. And he was one of those guys. I wish we had, like, 10,000 other customers like him, because he never complained about anything to me.
He didn't start fights on your Facebook page?
No, he was.
I think he used his personal page with.
Yeah, he
used my page for that.
I know.
Do you happen to recall that he and my sister like had this
got
huge,
into a huge argument?
Yeah, and so I'm like messaging them separately. George, cut it out. Natalie, cut it out. George, cut it out. Natalie. Cut. Meanwhile, they're just going back and forth. I don't even remember what they were fighting over, but it was stupid, and it went on for quite a while.
You know what else he roped me into? You had an event here. Was it the 75th anniversary of Holland's Head?
Yeah.
Convention, and we came out for the ceremony and stuff you had here. And George goes, "Are you going?" And I said, "I didn't know anything about it." And because you hadn't actually told anybody yet, it was really early. Mm-hmm. And he goes, "We got to come." And then I heard from you, but I go, "Oh, yeah, George told me." And you go, "George told you about it?" And I go, "George tells me everything."
What was this, an anniversary for what?
Actually, you know, George was a big part of our 50th anniversary in 2002.
Okay.
And, you know, the 75th anniversary of the world's first drive-in theater, which would have been whatever 33 plus 75 is.
2008.
Yeah.
Notice Scott and I were conspicuously silent.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out what they were talking about for a while.
Yeah, so George was always very enthusiastic about those type of events, you know, occasions. And, you know, I fed off his enthusiasm.
I really enjoyed when we had our first podcast here. It was for...
I remember it well.
Yeah. Craig wasn't here for that, unfortunately. And Craig should have been, because he would have had a blast making fun of George for the entire podcast. Because it was for this, The Force Awakens, Star Wars Episode 7, which the hype, I think it at least met the hype. Did not really exceed it. It fell short in some people's eyes, but I liked it. Scott, I know you liked it.
I thought it was great.
Craig eventually saw it. He liked it. Rick, I think you enjoyed it, right?
I actually showed a Death Star on the screen.
I remember driving by that so often, like, that is so cool.
Yeah. Yeah, the week before we opened Force Awaken, screen number 4 is visible from the road as you're driving by. So I just put on my laptop a, like, roaming version of the Death Star. On a slideshow.
Like a screensaver.
Like a screensaver. So overnight... as you're driving down Transit Row, there's the Death Star hovering over the drive-in.
My favorite memory of that night wasn't so much what we talked about, because we were there. It was like we were talking about the movie. We were talking about upcoming movies. There was still a poster for Deadpool on the wall. George was really looking forward to that. Meanwhile, as he's having all of this conversation with us, he's wearing a yellow uniform reminiscent of Captain Kirk. And he's like, "Yeah, I'm looking forward to this movie. Oh, we're seeing Star Wars? Okay.
Speaking of Deadpool, was it you who came with us? It was me and you, George, and Corey. We were in my wife's vehicle that smelled so bad?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, that was, what was that? Like, it was like Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, tumultuous time in my life, but that was fun.
I remember George complaining about a vehicle I had.
Yeah.
he had a veil of complaint this time.
Yeah.
Because it smelled terrible. We had garlic that had gotten wet and stuck under a seat and started to rot.
That's not good.
Awful.
That's not good.
I'm going to bow out. I have to.
You got some business to work?
Attend to my duties, and George bandmates are going to be performing at 8:30 in about 10 minutes.
Yep, we're going to start wrapping up. We want to thank you for allowing us again and hosting George's memorial.
Well, people are bowing out. I'm going to do the same, so you guys can wrap up.
All right.
Okay.
But thank you.
Thank you again, Rick. This is a great tribute for George.
It's an honor.
Rick has work to do. Scott has places to go.
I want to tell one last story about George before we go, and that has to do with hockey. And I wish Dave was here for it because he can attest to this.
Is that Dave right there?
Yeah. Hey, Dave. He's not paying attention.
He saw it in the
hockey Dave. Wasn't he Hockey Dave?
Yeah.
Hockey Dave.
He saw it in the memory book.
Yeah. Dave Rose. Yes, sir. Jump on here real quick.
He can hear you.
Yeah. He's ignoring me. It's like I'm talking to my wife.
She can't hear you.
No, she can't hear me right now.
What's up?
So, Dave, I have one last story about George, and it has to deal with hockey, and I know you were there for this.
Okay.
There was opportunity for us to go on road trips with the team, which I took advantage of. And George wanted to go, but every time he had something going on, so you could never make it. So one of the teams that came in was the New York Aviators, and I said, we should go to New York City for a game. He goes, I'm not going to New York City. I'll get mugged. Dude, you're 6'5". You remember this?
It was a funny comment coming from him, yes.
I think we were in the penalty box.
More than likely.
When we had this discussion.
More than likely.
And the look on your face when he said, I'll get mugged, was priceless.
Yeah, George is not going to get mugged anywhere. No way, no how.
Listen, if I'm going to New York City, I'm walking with George.
Exactly.
It's the safest place to be.
George was an older, out-of-weight tight end is what he was. No one's going to mug him.
No. And you know something else? The other thing about George is, and especially with the hockey organization, is George always showed up as a professional to Junior A hockey games. He came in a suit and a coat. Like he was going to be the next Rick Jenneret. I mean, that's just the way he appeared when he walked into the rink. And he looked like he owned the place.
He did.
Yeah,
he did.
So he was dedicated to his craft.
Yes. Absolutely.
Meanwhile, for Halloween one night, Craig showed up in a hockey uniform and I showed up in a Russian jersey and a babushka.
Yes, you did.
Yeah.
I remember that well.
He actually got pissed off the night that I showed up as, what's his name, from Up. Remember, I had the balloons and everything.
Yeah, Craig showed up as the old guy, Carl Fredrickson from Up. He had a cane. He had a
walker. I had a sport coat.
Dinosaur gray.
I love that
and
movie.
And I had the balloons. I went to Bad Tops, and I said, I need balloons. They go, what do you need balloons for? And I told them they were laughing their asses off. So I think I got like 8 balloons, and I paid for like 5 because they thought it was hilarious. Yeah.
Don't call it Bad Tops.
That's not right.
Bad Tops.
The hockey Halloween nights were some fun, especially with all of the different Challenger organization kids coming in their costumes, and George had a great time with them as well.
It always used to crack me up that George was the same age as Frank, but he always will call him Coach. We never call him Frank, ever. Did you ever notice that?
Yeah.
Never called him Frank.
There was one time I was doing play-by-play, and it was a break in the action, and I looked over to George, and I go, what do you think about that play? He goes, that play was pretty good. It was totally good. It was totes my goats. I couldn't say another word for the next 10 minutes. I'm like, oh, my. Because that was the most ridiculous thing locally, this totes my goats thing. I'm like, what are you talking about? And he brings it up on the air. I'm like, yeah.
Is that when the totes my goats thing, they found out that he was a crack dealer or something?
I don't remember what it was, but it was something, and I could not talk for a few minutes because I think Craig tried doing play-by-play, and then I got back on doing play-by-play, and George's like, thank you for being able to talk again, because he was making fun of you at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was also one night when the three of you were on, and I don't know what was said, but it was at the end of a period, and somebody closed out with something. I come walking up the stairs to head up toward the...
We're rolling. We're
toward the office, and the three of you guys were in tears laughing, and I have no idea what was said.
I can't remember. Aaron Shaheen? He was a guy from Wisconsin
Michigan,
whatever.
Yeah, big kid.
Big kid. Yeah, they call him Fridge.
Separated his shoulder at one point and really...
His parents loved us.
Mm-hmm.
Loved us.
I think we might have been talking about one of the Logars at that point.
Yeah. The filthy animal. George always called him the filthy animal.
Yeah.
The boss is here.
Not the boss.
Kind of. Do you remember meeting George for the first time? Was it at our house?
It must have been.
When we were sitting around the table writing?
Laughing like a bunch of girls.
About something we had written, yeah.
That was a good time.
Would you say we were tittering?
Full out laughing at some points.
Oh my goodness. I would walk in from work and they would just be laughing so hard, like slapping the table, tears running down their faces. And then they'd call me over and be like, hey, listen to this. And I'm like, uh-huh, okay.
See,
they
were
all just so proud of themselves.
And then we did a read-through with other people, and we're laughing our asses off. Even when they didn't get the jokes and they just roll past it, we're like, we loved it. It was a good time.
I really think my favorite, though, is the literally, figuratively.
And the math thing.
Because he was wrong about the math.
This
sure.
is the way I learned math when I was in blah, blah, blah. And
No, you didn't. I was texting away because that was before you guys started broadcasting from the house. But I was texting back and forth with them, and dude, you're wrong. But the literally was by far, George just lost his mind. If you haven't ever listened to that episode or that piece, check it out because George just went crazy.
And I say that word all the time on this podcast. Literally, I do.
But that is figuratively the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
I know.
You do. You say it a lot.
I say it a lot on the podcast.
Hey, guess who's here? Listen very carefully. It's Charlie.
Uh-huh. At least Yoko hasn't spilled wine on the soundboard yet.
She hasn't spilled wine on this soundboard. Vinny's drink is right at the edge of the board, so...
Just wait.
Careful, Vinny. They'll buy you a
It'll
sippy
happen.
Cup, too.
Perfect. I need another one to add to my collection.
Oh, Dodge said that there's something missing.
Or in the and the womp, womp, womp.
Oh, yeah, sound effects.
Womp, 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 womp. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
That's the most that Charlie said in the last year.
Yeah.
He's actually been at every podcast.
Yeah.
We just don't know it.
Right.
Well, yeah. The year's not over yet, though.
Are you coming back on any Monday night?
Could.
He's a man of few words. Not the best color man in the league for nothing, folks.
It looks like they're going to be
performing Pink Floyd in here.
And I think that we should.
That's our cue.
Record.
Oh, well.
There you go.
You record. I actually brought my kids with me this evening.
So you got to take care of your kids.
I got to get my kids and get them home, as we've explained.
So it looks like they're about ready here. And so we'll wrap up our part here. We'll record them. And
the only time he has wrapped up.
Yeah. Thank you guys for coming out. I'm glad to see so many people here for George.
Yes.
It's been fun. It's been fun getting to meet some new people that you didn't know.
Yeah.
It's been really cool.
Well, definitely one thing I've noticed, and surprisingly it's about Godzilla, is George was a Godzilla of a person in a way.
Bigger than life
in many ways, and that's how I equated this. You know, that was the craziest thing that came to me is he was that person, is he was that bigger than life kind of hero-ish in a way.
Almost like a second father figure to you?
Easily, definitely. You know, he definitely always looked out for me, what I was doing. If anything was wrong with me and my sister have always had butted heads and stuff like that, and he's always been, there to help me in any shape or form. So, but I'll leave on that.
I think we'll all leave on that. You got something to say, Howie?
I'm just saying it's been a blast this evening. It really has. So
I still miss him every day.
He's missed,
I do
but
too.
I smile when I think of him.
Sure. Right.
So, yeah.
Real quick before we go, I just want to point out to people who are listening to this and couldn't be here, there's a whole wall of celebrities because we're at a drive-in, and Gwyneth Paltrow has been staring at the back of Craig's head this entire time.
She wants to introduce me to her foof.
Yes, her foof. Yes.
We had to get a foof. Shenanigans moment in.
Oh, yeah, we had some.
The squirrels are almost showing.
Yeah. And there's the winner. Ding, ding, ding. Dave with the winner.
Do we get a website of the day?
No, we're not doing that.
The website of the day is...
Facebook.com.
Yep, Facebook.com. Yep.
Oh, my God.
All right, it looks like they're getting ready over there. So
actually, let's be serious for a minute. The website of the day is Roswell whatever, and if you want to donate in George's memory, do
please
so.
Do. Yes.
Yes.
So. All right, so for all of us here at Shenanigans, we're going to leave you with a live version, I think, of Wish You Were Here, right?
That should be what begins in just a couple minutes.
All right, we'll record it. You'll hear that, and we'll play it and pay the fines if we have to. Thanks. Good night.
Hey, folks, those of you who are here for the song, why don't you come up close, all right? Because we don't have a PA system or anything like that. We're going to do this kind of campfire style.
I would like everybody to sing.
And you all know this song, so you can sing along as well.
All right?
No. There's no way Bugs Bunny could have thrown that baseball and have it come back with stickers from around the world unless the world was round. The world is round. Am I turning on Howie or am I turning on Howie? But